Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
And welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. I'm Joe Saul-Sehy from Stacking Benjamins. In the driver's seat today, man, do we have an exciting discussion for you, because normally, lately, you've heard him for, well, you've heard about this gentleman for about 2 minutes during the show. Once at the beginning, me talking about him, and then in the middle, me also talking about them. And of course, I'm talking about the Buzz Index and its founder, Jamie Wise from the Buzz Indexes. Welcome to the party, man.
It is great to be here and looking forward to the longer discussion today. How are you, Joe?
I'm fantastic. And I love this idea of the longer discussion, because I know people hear the segments about the Buzz Index and they want a little more information. So I'm glad you could take a little more time to talk about it. When did you realize, Jamie, that a new index like this might be in order?
4 years ago. Okay. Wow, that sounds like a long time ago, doesn't it? But really, it was 4 years ago where I started to see the first bits of academic research around this approach trickling out. And when I read those research reports and married it to what was happening in the consumer product world and how companies like Procter & Gamble were really all over online content to mine information to help them make better decisions, I knew the natural extension of that was going to be finance and investing.
What exactly was it about the research reports that interested you? What was the hook?
The hook for me was, can we actually find a way to measure sentiment predictively? I think this has been a hidden holy grail in investing for years, where all the sentiment insights we'd ever seen were always talked about from the perspective of contrarianism. It is when everyone is excited about something, it has to be the top, and vice versa. But everything we know from academic theory tells us that if you have a way of properly measuring sentiment, it should be predictive about what is going to happen and not contrarian. To me, this was the hook that could get us there.
It's funny, because we've had things like volume, right, that we've looked at in the past. Maybe some people look at like the stochastic around investments, like some of the technical analysis people look at and they point to and say, well, these are predictors. Do those go into it all, the Buzz Index? Do you look at those on top of what the crowd's saying, or is it by and large just what the crowd's telling you?
It's what people are saying. It's not a technical, there's no technical overlays to this approach. There's no fundamental overlays to this approach. What we're really trying to identify is sources of demand and consistent levels of demand behind an investing theme or a stock specifically, and then carrying that momentum forward. So there's no interaction or intervention on top of what thousands of people are saying they're actually doing in their investment portfolios.
But you talk about a lot, I know, about this is different than a survey. Like, you could go survey people. What's the difference between what you guys are doing and sending out a survey that says, hey, what do you think about X investment?
In a word, it's independence, right? So the key difference with online communities and online forums is that people are independent and freely going there to discuss their views. They're not being asked a question. They're not being forced into choices. They're not concerned about what the interviewer may want to hear or what their peers may be doing. They have their own internal incentive to go online, to seek more information, to seek engagement, to seek feedback. And by volunteering that information independently, and you have a diverse group of people doing that, it's a very different equation than a traditional polling metric.
Can you tell if people are voting with their money as well, or is it just people that have a track record of being right that you're tracking, and you're just tracking specifically what they say?
Yeah, you can tell. It's a good question. And the thing that I'm hesitant to do is to drill into, you know, what an individual blog post or tweet or comment might be about a stock, because you might read too much into that. There are certainly people talking about what they just did with their investing dollars, right? I just bought shares of Disney stock, or I am about to buy call options. That is a very clear, positive indicator of their intention toward the stock and their view around that stock. There are people that just don't talk in those specifics as well, but talk about, you know, I think this is an interesting product that this company is developing, and this could have long-term implications for its share price. You don't know if they've bought it or not yet, but you certainly can identify sentiment within that conversation. the algorithm is really good at tracking people, right? So because you post something online, you understand when that post was made, and you can certainly reference the stock price at the time of the post and then see what the stock price did subsequent to their comment about that stock in the days, weeks, and months going forward. Accuracy is important, but it's not a driver of overall sentiment, right? So if someone is very good at predicting Disney stock, that's good information to know. But if you are overwhelmed with a sentiment of the collective that is opposed to that person's track record and accuracy, that could actually outweigh or tip the balance on the future performance of that stock. As individuals, whether you're an individual do-it-yourself investor or whether you are a star portfolio manager, no one can get it right all the time. We know that, right? What we're doing by crowdsourcing information is saying that the collective view and sentiment and opinion of thousands of people on balance over time should be right far more often than any individual or individual expert within that group.
And obviously your backtesting of the index, even before it was created, I mean, you wouldn't have created the index if the backtesting hadn't held up.
Yeah, it held up. And, you know, one of the challenges for backtesting a strategy like this is it relies on a large amount of social volume and discussion online around stocks and investing. That didn't really start till 2013 in meaningful ways, right? It was spotty. It was maybe limited to a certain sector or a certain style of security. You can't backtest the strategy through the financial crisis. You can't backtest the strategy through, you know, the tech craze of the late 90s. No one was talking about stocks. So there is a challenge, but certainly since that conversation was vibrant, the strategy seems to have performed very well.
Well, and you and I have already seen that. Let's talk about some of the things that have happened. I know that the index has beaten the pants off of the indexes that it competes against, the Momentum Index, and also, of course, the S&P, which it doesn't compare to as much. But I'm very intrigued with what happened around the election. And I'd love for you to tell that story, because it seems like the way that the index performed around the election really was, kind of looking back, Jamie, really what the Buzz Index is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw it in, I think, two sectors really stand out in which, you know, Trump's policies, or there was a huge difference between the policy of, you know, potentially Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. And that, of course, is within healthcare stocks, and it was also within financials. You know, Hillary, it was very clear going into the election that a Hillary victory would be very negative towards healthcare stocks. This was before Trump started tweeting and talking about drug prices being an issue. At that time, the candidate Hillary was only concerned about drug prices, and the view was that healthcare stocks would certainly underperform under her administration. We never saw people's sentiment toward that sector wane leading into the election. That's very interesting. So does that mean that people saw or foresaw a Trump victory, or did they think that the investment merits of individual healthcare stocks would stand up on their own regardless of which candidate won? I think it's a bit of both, but certainly at some level, the positive outlook towards healthcare stocks was a reflection of what was not being picked up in polls, and that is that Trump was actually doing better than most people thought, and there was a chance that he was going to win, and it was probably a good chance. What we saw after the election with respect to financials, and we didn't see a meaningful uptick in our financial weighting. We saw it increase a little bit, but shortly after the election, it was clear that financials were going to be a big winner under his administration with reduced regulation and all the other things that he talks about. That information gets absorbed by the community very quickly. And we saw our weighting in financials actually jump right up right after the election as people really became positive on the sector and understood that it wasn't a very short-term move following the election, that there was really some momentum and that financial sector had room to run. And of course, we've seen it rally 30% plus since the election.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And you're also seeing, I know, so because you and I talk over on my Stacking Benjamin show once a month, I know you're also seeing some scary things about the market now playing out inside your index.
Well, we'll go right back to financials. So financials has had that big run up, but just in our most recent rebalance, we saw our weight significantly decrease. Three financial stocks came out of the index. I think what we're seeing is that the rally's run its course. People priced in a full-term Trump administration positive policy all within 2 months, and the stocks are now expensive. The run has been dramatic. We're seeing the collective say, pause here. I don't know if it's going down, but it certainly isn't going to continue at the pace it has over the last 2 months.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that's about to be seen, but you guys have been such a predictor lately of kind of what's coming. I don't know if scares me is the right word, Jamie, but it certainly gives me pause to go, I wonder what's here. And of course, you don't even know what's there, right? I mean, because you're looking at so many different things and it's an algorithm, it's tough for you. You got to kind of read the tea leaves yourself.
Yeah, exactly right. In the same way that the algorithm is able to read millions and millions of tweets and blog posts and those types of things, you know, we can certainly see the output of what the algorithm is inferring from those conversations from a sentiment perspective. But then to go through that exercise and try and drill down into, you know, all the tweets about financial securities and banks and those types of stocks and parse it down and read millions and millions of posts to try and understand exactly why that is, you have to do it from 30,000 feet. We just don't have enough time in the day or manpower right. to possibly be able to aggregate that amount of information.
Which is huge that the computer's just looking for waves and is finding waves and discovering new territory that humans can't do. I want to talk about that for a second because you obviously have certain people, certain sources that the algorithm picks up. In the past, you've talked about how you know, you choose 75 companies and those companies then are added to the index if your sentiment indicator is really high. But what about the sources that you have? If somebody, you know, let's say Jamie Wise takes up drinking and he's one of your sources. And for the last 3 months, he's been horrible. Do you find that the algorithm then also dumps some of the sources when they don't seem to be as reliable anymore?
We don't think of dumping the sources. Everyone has a voice and it's not our place to say that their opinion doesn't matter. Where it is our place in that regard is if it's not a human being talking and if there's some kind of bot trying to, for whatever reason, talk about a stock over and over and over again. And we can identify those types of situations. But if someone's influence is waning or their accuracy is waning, their opinion, again, it's still valid. Remember, no one is going to get it right all the time. Influence certainly matters. If you know, Joe, you start tweeting about stocks and you've only got 100 followers after a month and no one really cares about what you're saying, your reach and your opinion is probably less likely to sway people or resonate with the broader community. If we now see you 6 months later and you've got 5,000 followers and people are really engaged with what you're saying and they're retweeting it and agreeing with your comments, well, then you do have a little bit more sway in the community and that can impact the model as well. Again, it influences it, but it doesn't drive it. What's much more important overall is the overall consensus view.
Yeah, you're way more worried about the crowd.
Exactly right. Yeah. The crowd should get it right more often than any one expert or any one novice player. The crowd should make that better decision or is in a position to make a better decision.
Yeah, right, sure. Right. I want to back away from the buzz index for just a second, Jamie, and I want to talk about just a trend in general that I've seen, not around the robos, but around what you're doing. But really, I think to some degree, robos are a part of that, of the same trend. I have seen not just the Buzz Index, but also an index that tracks and purchases companies that have the best customer satisfaction, mutual funds and exchange traded funds that track insider trading and only trade, you know, when a company has big time insider trading and just follows that, what the directors and insiders are doing. It seems like instead of looking at the old time large cap, mid cap, small cap, that we're now looking at other ways of investing money. Do you see this as a bigger trend that you guys are just on the starting edge of, or are we going to see just a few of you guys and, the old Morningstar style box is still the number one way to go?
This is absolutely a new trend. I think if you're not thinking about alternative sources of data for your analysis when it comes to selecting the right investments to be a part of, you better start thinking about it or you're already getting behind. If we use a baseball analogy, we're probably still in the first or second inning. Certainly, the most sophisticated hedge funds and asset managers are using alternative data sources. And whether that is online content, social content, geo-tracking, real-time data analysis, customer purchase intent, all of those things are so much more relevant than an individual portfolio manager and a research analyst who, read through an annual report and go to an annual meeting and maybe have a conference call with management every quarter. you need to understand, you know, our economy, it moves at such a fast pace. People's intentions and what they're predisposed to liking, whether it's, you know, going from a Nike to an Under Armour, and what brands are really resonating with the community. Those preferences change so much, and they change because we're an online connected social world, and we're constantly influencing each other about these decisions. You have to listen to all of these alternative data sets. And if you're not thinking about them, then you're really not getting the whole picture of what's impacting your investing portfolio.
But it seems like also to some degree, there's going to be some sexiness to this area over time, where it seems to me that, Jamie, we're going to see some, you know, some stuff that looks hot and it's a nice, sexy thing to talk about. But that's all it is. It's an empty suit.
Well, I think of those things as themes relative to investment approaches, right? So, you know, there certainly are lots of products out there that try and identify specific themes around investing, whether it's cybersecurity or millennials or those types of things. I agree with you there. I think those things might have a little bit of fad elements to them. What we're doing, I don't think, really falls into the theme category. It's an approach. It's utilizing technology to make better decisions. That's not a theme. That's a change in structure.
Right.
And that should carry forward and be more relevant than just, you know, a fad or a theme that will bubble up.
I'm thinking of the book Flash Boys, right? Michael Lewis talking about how hedge fund managers, to your point, are already using all this data. And if the data exists, why wouldn't we want to put it in our portfolio?
Make their edge your edge. That is what Buzz is all about. Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff. When you look at Buzz and you look at the algorithm that you and your team has built, do you see any changes coming up in the future? Do you see any sea changes about the way, or do you guys go in there from time to time and tweak what you're doing? How does that work?
Yeah, it's not a tweak. It's about making sure the algorithm is always learning. So much in the same way that you and I and other investment professionals and even people that are just doing their own stock research, we're always trying to get smarter one way or another. And that's through courses and seminars and training and all of those things that we do to better ourselves. Algorithms, and that's why it's called artificial intelligence, really act in the same way. They need to learn too as time goes by. Dynamics change, people talk in different tones, people talk about different things. So the challenge for us is making sure that our algorithm is exposed to that as much information as possible so that it can pick up on those changes and get smarter itself over time at identifying what people's true intent is.
The index is the Buzz Index. It trades at ticker symbol BUZ, and you can find out more if you head to this link, moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. Jamie Wise, thanks for hanging out, man.
Great to be here. Thanks, Joe.
Hey, friends, you know, this is normally when we have our sponsor spot. Of course, what you've heard today is an interview with our sponsor, Jamie Wise. And because of that, we're not going to have sponsor spots, but we will say this: if you're interested in the Buzz Index, head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for more. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. I also need to say, as we're partway through today's episode, I own shares in the Buzz Index. So need to disclose that. That shouldn't hopefully affect whether you like the Buzz Index or not. Just head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for more on the Buzz Index. All right. With that disclaimer out of the way, guys, let's introduce our crack panel of experts, or our panel of cracked individuals. I don't know which is right. We'll start in the great state of Idaho, where Miranda Marquit may or may not be snowed in. Are you snowed in?
I am not. I am watching with glee as Stella dumps tons of snow on everybody else, and I am enjoying 60-degree weather and happy. So I know it's a terrible thing to wish horrible things on all of my friends on the East Coast, and I do have several, especially in the Philadelphia area, but part of me is just like, ha, you guys had a nice warm winter compared to me, and now you're getting yours.
Linda P. Jones, every time, and Miranda just said Stella, every single time somebody says Stella, do you do what I do?
What?
I go, Stella!
No.
No? No? Streetcar Named Desire?
It's a famous thing.
I think it's too. I think it's too.
Do you, Miranda? Well, there's two of us geeks here. Linda, how are you?
I'm great. It's only 94 degrees here this week, so, you know.
Yeah, so you're watching the East Coast going, wow.
We're having the other extreme.
Yeah. Well, welcome to, you know, it'll probably be snowing there next week, right?
Well, it's just too hot for March. And if it's this hot in March, how hot is it going to be during July, August, you know? So,
Yeah, I can't stop foreshadowing. I mean, I'm in Texas and I'm already worried the same way. Doug Goldstein, you had an eventful day. Your daughter got engaged.
Indeed, she did. I'm very excited, and I'm glad you asked me about that instead of about the weather, because I was trying to think of a way I could change the subject to mention that, yay, my daughter got engaged.
How about that? Fantastic. Does that mean you're no longer going to have to pay your cell phone bill?
That means that actually when I secretly knew she was going to get engaged, I sold all of her stocks because she would need the money to pay for the wedding and to pay for, you know, a little education and maybe even a little bit for a house.
My daughter just got a job, and the reason I brought up the cell phone bill was because the second my daughter got a job, and this is horrible, but I start thinking about what's in it for me, right? I mean, it's a great time. It's a great time for your daughter, but you're like, wow, I don't have to pay your cell phone. Oh, the health insurance. Holy, well, maybe we're going to save a bundle of money. Did you have the same thought?
I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, honest.
Well, listen, we're happy that she's found a wonderful young man for them to build a life together in an apartment that they will pay for and have their own car. And yeah, but he's a great guy. But it turns out that although we had saved money for this event for literally for decades, and so we said, okay, that account is for this. All of a sudden, we're buying a present. We're paying for a little bit for an engagement thing and this and that. So no matter what you think you're going to do, it always ends up costing more.
We got to have you on as our guest of honor talking wedding planning.
That's
what we'll do next. And we also have to, you had a lot of news today. Your son entered the military today.
That's right. My son, today was his first day. He joined the paratroopers of the Israeli Defense Forces. So we are very, very proud of him.
Besides that, nothing going on with the Goldstein family.
Yeah, pretty much it's slow here.
Right. Well, let's fill in all this boring time for the Goldsteins with some fun talk. I don't want to go too much into the Buzz Index. I think Jamie talked a lot about that. But I want to talk about this idea, not just of buzz, but, you know, there's directional funds out there which follow insiders. And when insiders buy and sell, they buy and sell shares. You have another index now that follows the customer service of companies. It is companies, customer service ratings go up, they buy more shares, customer service ratings go down, they eliminate them from the index. It seems like Jamie and the Buzz Index are not alone there. But my question isn't about the future. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But Linda, let's start with you. Do you think this is the new, quote, active investing?
I don't know if it's a new active investing. I think it certainly is a step in that direction. And what I was so fascinated to find out about was just how they are gathering information from a lot of financial websites, which I originally thought that this was just about the public buzz. And so I was really interested when he said, no, we really follow the cash tags, you know, the dollar sign with the stock price, and that they follow people who are recommending stocks, you know, on these different sites. So I thought, hey, you know, we're finally going to get some data on Cramer. Is Cramer any good as a stock picker?
But that's the rip, is that there's somebody like Cramer, and let's say that he had some bad tuna fish that day and decides to buy a couple bad things, right? Now, instead of that, you have people like Jamie and these other funds that I mentioned earlier that are purchasing algorithmically. I mean, there's no manager in charge, but you've got buying and selling happen automatically. Do you think guys like Cramer, they're now on the clock? It's going to end soon?
No, I don't think it's going to end soon. I think that but I do see that financial management is going to go to a more computerized process, a more artificial intelligence process. I think that's only natural for them to, I mean, we've already seen that in the hedge funds where they're doing the high frequency trading and they're 2 milliseconds ahead of other trades. And so they're anticipating the trade before it even gets there. And, you know, they're sort of playing the system in a different way, and which is not a good thing. But in this case, I think that there's a lot of positive artificial intelligence that can be done in the financial industry that can help manage money better.
Miranda, you're somebody who obviously, for longtime listeners, they know, new listeners don't know this, you're a big indexer, but now you can have, it seems like, your cake and eat it too, if you've got an algorithm that you can follow. So I think with an algorithm, does that mean you're more likely to go toward active trading because you know you can trust the algorithm where you don't have to trust a human being?
You're telling me to trust Skynet?
Is that what you're saying? You're telling me to trust my fate to an algorithm? No, I mean, and really in a lot of ways, you kind of do that if you're using a robo-advisor. You are trusting your fate to an algorithm. But I actually find things like this very interesting in terms of index investing and sort of this way of combining index investing with active trading. To me, it's very interesting. I haven't quite made the leap yet, but I can definitely see myself. I could see myself giving it a try, maybe with some of my extra money, some of my play money, just to see what kind of thing you end up with. So I can see myself kind of giving it a try.
Doug, we looking at the future of active investing here?
You know, I think that this is active investing, just like many, many systems are active investing. The fact that you have a manager who's got a system or a certain research style, that doesn't make it an index the way people think of like the S&P 500, which is just a list of stocks. Although actually now that I'm saying maybe it is, you say I'm going to actively invest to get the 500 biggest stocks to trade. But here, there is a system they have. They're looking at what the social media is talking about or what people are really buzzing about on the web. And that's how they're making their decisions. The fact that it's automated, I don't think means that it's not active, because there is active trading going on. And by the way, I would guess that if there are a lot of trades inside the Buzz Index ETF, this ETF might be a lot more taxable than other ETFs that people are familiar with, where they're usually used to not getting much in terms of internal capital gains distributions, which create a tax bill at the end of the year.
Yeah, lots of trades means this is probably the type of thing, if you're going to do it, that's better for maybe your Roth IRA is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think, well, why a Roth as opposed to a traditional IRA?
I just threw one out.
Or a SIP IRA or a Keo plan.
Or some
or
sort of something.
A 401k.
Now you're just showing off. But you say that this is active, Doug, getting back to this. It's definitely active trading. But I think that, you know, this seems to be...
It's not a guy is making a decision is what you're
saying.
It seems like
the days of a man or woman just making a decision based on their gut is, those days are numbered.
You know, this argument, which we can certainly have and be the 50,000th financial expert to talk about it, is do people add value to the equation? And I think the answer is sometimes they do, and you're going to have some way of trading. But the fact that we use ETFs, by the way, I myself use them all the time, or I have the money managers use them, they're trading ETFs or index funds because of all the value and benefits that they may have, like diversification and lower fees inside. But it doesn't mean that there's, you know, someone's got to decide which fund to buy. And, you know, when you listed so many different types of funds, the Buzz Index currently looks cool because they've done a little back testing and it seemed to have done well. But there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of other ideas that people have had that didn't work out so well. So they might have a really exciting tone to it, like, you know, we look at how many boxes are being, you know, cut or somewhere, and therefore we're gonna figure out from that which stocks we should buy. You can always find correlations, but whether correlation is some kind of causation for the value of an investment to go up, I think is always going to be unknown.
Linda, Jamie says that, you know, hedge fund managers have been using strategies like these and algorithms like these for some time. Is that really a benefit? As I stop and think about it, I'm not sure whether that's a benefit or not. If a hedge fund manager does it, does that mean I should have it in my portfolio?
Well, there's two different parts to that question in my mind. There's the technology part and then there's the human part. And when I worked for a very large firm and one of our most successful money management teams focused on what they called an inside edge. And the inside edge was some kind of information that they would find out by interviewing the management team of a company and discovering, you know, that they did something special, let's say like Walmart in the olden days, when they used to, you know, they were the first to really come up with a computerized inventory system that was just so far ahead of everyone else. So that would be an example of an inside edge. And then they would invest in that company. Well, now what you have with the Buzz Index is you almost have, you know, like when you go to Yahoo Finance and you want to see how many analysts have a buy on a certain stock or a hold or a sell, you now are getting that through these 20 plus financial sites that they are monitoring on social media, and you're getting that information. Then they're giving weight to the people who are better money managers. So I really think it's kind of a combination of this investment edge that's human, but then they're taking it and putting it to the next level with that computer technology. So I guess it's different than what hedge funds do, but it's sort of along, you know, similar lines. But I think it's different. It's new. It's unique. And I'm really curious to see how the performance comes out over the long term.
Do you think those analyst recommendations actually mean something? In other words, if we were to put together the Money Tree podcast index of that, you know, would that do better than everything else?
No, but here's the thing. Those analyst recommendations on Yahoo don't have any rankings in terms of who's a better analyst and who's not. In term, you know, like if three analysts have a buy on a stock, then three analysts have a buy on a stock. What if one analyst is really great and two are terrible? We don't know that. But in this index, the way they're doing this, they're actually putting more weight on the people that have a better track record. So over time, it would have a bias toward the better performance, you would think. And so I'm curious to see how that all plays out.
How do you see them doing that?
They say that they do that. They use influence by the number of people following them. And then they said they look at it by like what success they've had. I read the white paper.
All right. I defer to you.
It's funny, though, when we look at this idea that Linda's talking about, Miranda, of the inside edge, is this the type of strategy, and I'm not talking specifically about the Buzz Index, but I'm talking about this idea of an algorithmic strategy. Is this a type of thing that the average investor should be comfortable with being the hull of the ship when it comes to their portfolio? In other words, I throw out the S&P 500 as the middle point of my portfolio, as the basis of my portfolio, and instead I'll use this algorithmic trading solution that is going to provide me with this supposedly, you know, if everything works out right, consistent results.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of, I'm really bad with ship analogies because I don't build ships, but, but no, I like what you're saying about the S&P 500 or some other broad-based index as kind of your base. Quite frankly, I use that broad-based index, and that is the foundation of my retirement portfolio. That is, you know, I put enough, you know, I've done my retirement needs assessment, and I make sure that I contribute enough each month so that I can hit my retirement goal just with the money I am putting in that account. Everything else is gravy. Everything else is playing around. Everything else is trying to boost my yield and maybe get a little bit extra. And so just because I do understand my own personal risk tolerance and what I am interested in, and how I want to make sure things go, I specifically make sure that with the broad-based index, I am putting enough in that I will most likely hit my retirement goal, and then everything else is just sort of extra, if that makes sense. So something like this, like I said earlier, would be great because it's a nice thought that you're going to get consistent returns. But as we know, even with a broad-based index, you know, you're going to have the downtimes. It's just the way it is. And so I think it's nice to have like the gravy. I don't know. I call it the pretty ribbons that fly off the top of the mast and make it pretty, or the little, you know, decorative scrolling or whatever you use. I mean, pretty much my whole ship is built with like a broad-based index, you know, broad-based index funds with asset allocation in mind. And then everything else is pretty much just the pretty things.
Just to make sure I understand what you're saying that this is this type of an index or this type of a strategy would be gravy, wouldn't be the spine of your portfolio.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm glad that you know, I went through all of that and you just made sense.
I don't know that I made sense. I was trying to figure out, you know, is it yes or no? Doug, you're a guy that recommends managers to your clients. I think you've said that in past episodes of the show. If a manager has an algorithm that they're using versus, you know, their gut, does that make you more excited about using them or less excited?
I like the managers that do enough research that they can explain why they're buying something. And it's not just, well, this is a pretty low PE. You know, in fact, we had on the show, we spoke to Chris Cogswell, who's one of the money managers that I work with. And they work with a larger company that does hedging for insurance companies that has an algorithm to decide how much cash to raise in a portfolio, which they use in order to try to limit volatility. So basically, if they think the market's going a little bit crazy, they'll sell stocks and have more cash. And then when they feel that things are less volatile, they'll go back into the stock market. So they've got a system that it's an overlay system. And in fact, I know Jamie mentioned that they don't use an overlay system. So the overlay system that, for example, one of the managers that I work with uses is to decide how much cash to have in the portfolio. But the bottom line of which ETFs they're buying and the diversification, which in this case is global, that's decided because someone's actually researching and trying to make a decision, not just, you know, let me throw it into 10 different indexes.
Yeah. Linda, do you see a portfolio like this being a hull of the ship? Do you like my hull analogy or no? Should I say the spine of the kite? I don't know.
Do we have to make these weird analogies? Trunk of the tree.
Whatever happened to core satellite? What happened to core satellite? That's interesting lingo. I don't know this other lingo.
Let's do that. Let's go ahead. Fine, we'll use the traditional one. Is a strategy like this part of your core portfolio or the basis of your core portfolio?
I think it would be more of a satellite, but I really would be interested to see over time how this evolves. And yeah, I think there is an interesting element to this that is basically, you know, bringing together top people on the web. And let's face it, a lot of money managers are on the web now. So, you know, who's being left out? I don't know. But it is gathering information from top people on the web, ranking that in with their algorithm and giving certain things weight, and then coming up with the portfolio and rebalancing monthly from there. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I do think that this is more of a satellite type approach, but I do think also that this is a trend of things to come, and we're moving in this direction of artificial intelligence helping out investing, and it's going to be interesting to see where we are 5 years from now.
I totally agree. And kind of to wrap up this conversation, you know, we've talked a lot about where does this fit in the portfolio? Does it fit? Is this type of investing, not just with the Buzz Index, but with lots of the new strategies that we're seeing that are similar to the Buzz Index? Where do all these things fit? I guess I want to broaden this discussion a little more. When we talk about what investments are right for us, if I'm listening to this podcast, what are some of the screens that you guys use to decide if an investment fits your portfolio? Miranda, let's start with you.
Yeah. So most of the time I just look at it and say, is this a broad-based index and does it work with my financial plan? Let's be honest. And for the most part, as far as like, you know, building the core of my portfolio, it really goes down to how does this fit with the asset allocation that I need? And is this a broad-based index fund? And then it kind of goes from there with, do I think this is interesting? Do I think that this could add a little bit extra to my earnings? Do I think that this could be an interesting way to kind of boost my portfolio? And so, yeah, I mean, I don't have any really great things like, let's look at the PE ratio and let's look at the, you know, let's look at the book value.
But you kind of glossed over something I think that's really big when you said, does it fit my financial plan? Which means it's got to be a certain risk tolerance for a certain amount of time until you need that money, which is, you know, two big things I think people don't look at.
Yeah. And pretty much all of it just goes into, rather than looking at like sheer numbers, most of it just goes into looking at, okay, how does this fit in with my goals? How will this help me achieve my desired outcome? Do I think it's likely to help me achieve my desired outcome? So that's really pretty much the screeners I use when I'm trying to decide what to add to my portfolio.
What's interesting about what Miranda said, Doug, was also what she didn't say. She didn't say that I pick it because the person next to me at work said this is going to be the next hot thing.
Yeah, you got to watch out for that. That's a big deal. Listen, I think there are a lot of different ways of choosing. My core portfolio is all managed by money managers for my own money. And the satellites, which I do play around a little bit, a couple of stocks that we'll buy. I really say that we buy stocks just so it gives us something to talk about around the, you know, the dining room table with the kids, because it's boring to talk about an ETF, but it's exciting to talk about a stock because there's always a story and the company's doing something. But if I'm going to buy, let's say, a satellite ETF, just something I'm looking at, I do look at the statistics. I'll look at things like dividend yield and the size. I want to make sure it's a big enough fund, things like PE, and I'll compare it to what's going on in the market. Is it liquid enough? And then, of course, if you're doing this kind of picking anyway, you've got to pick because you like the idea. You know, you want to invest in a certain country or a technology or, you know, some area that you actually deep in your heart believe this is the future of the world. And probably you'll lose money on it because most people do. But at least you have to, you know, if this is the game you want to play with what Miranda calls play money, at least have a reason for buying it because you believe there's a future in whatever industry you're investing in.
Linda, you use a system, Investor's Business Daily, but and so I don't want to have you recap how Investor's Business Daily works, because if I asked you the same question, it would be, well, I base my picks based on X, Y, and Z criteria that they also use. How did you pick Investor's Business Daily as the system that you thought was right for you?
Let me go back to where Investor's Business Daily and I first found each other, which was back in the 90s. So it was when I was getting interested in investing in individual stocks that I found Investor's Business Daily. Today, with the VIP experience and my own investments, I use a modified asset allocation model, which is, you know, core of large cap, mid cap, small cap, international. But I also have, you know, maybe 20% in individual stocks or 20% in ETFs. We only use ETFs in the VIP experience. And so we might be looking at, you know, what sectors are doing well, like REITs, or what countries are doing well for that 20%.
So more of a macro view.
Yeah, it's more of a macro view. And it's more of where is the performance coming from right now? I mean, I do watch performance and see, you know, what's doing well, and does it have a chance of doing well for more than 1 year? You know, I'm not chasing like what's just going to be hot this year, but if you're looking at China, is China able to continue for many years and continue to have good performance? So I do look at all those things, and it makes it interesting and fun to kind of have that 20% that you can pepper your portfolio with.
Where does risk fit in there? I mean, do you look at, when you say time frames, you're not looking at 1 year, but are you looking at, I've got 5 years until I need this money, so I think this thing over 5 years is going to deliver X return?
I always take a 3 to 5 year perspective, okay. Yes. So it's always, you know, for the long term, can this be something that can be invested in for a 3 to 5 year period?
We should talk about that sometime. Top-down versus bottom-up investing. That's a interesting thing that I think a lot of people don't understand, but not today, because I'm looking at the clock and I think we're out of time. So let's talk
hey,
about...
Hey, wait a minute. You didn't answer the question.
What question is that?
How you choose your portfolio.
Oh, so I choose my portfolio based on the system. I'm always intrigued by, and this is I think why Jamie and I get along so well, is that I'm always intrigued by a systematic approach. I like in business a system. I like investing in a system. I like knowing. I always worry, and I obviously worry. And as Jamie said, you know, backtesting is also a little difficult because of how much social media has changed lately. So I would love to have even more backtesting than the Buzz Index can give us. It wasn't a big enough issue for me to not invest. I did invest some money in it, and I've been very happy. And once again, past performance is no indicator of future results. So don't take that as Joe's endorsement that you should do it too. But I like what all you guys said. It's all based on time frame and based on which account it should go in. I love what Doug said earlier about should this be in a taxable account or a tax sheltered account? So I don't know if that's sounds like a way muddy way of answering my own question, but I think we'll leave it there for today. Let's go around and find out what's happening at your places of business. Miranda, what's happening at Adulting or Planting Money Seeds?
Yeah. So actually, if you run over to Adulting TV, we have got some stuff up about avoiding negativity in the news.
Is there negativity?
I know, right? I know it's not really financial, but for a lot of people, this is an issue. So we have that happening. And then we also have, we've got a great interview with Aaron Lowry from Broke Millennial, talking about how to stop scraping by, how to stop getting out of the paycheck to paycheck mode. So step on by adulting.tv if you're looking to figure out how you're going to come up with the money to start investing. That can help you.
Aaron Lowry is one of my favorite people on the internet. We got to have her on.
She's great. Yep, she's great.
Yeah, fantastic. Linda, how about Be Wealthy and Smart?
Well, it's timely that we just did a podcast on the best performing ETFs in 2017. So you can check out what's been doing well this year in the U.S., foreign sectors, et cetera, and see what's going on there.
Awesome. And Doug, Goldstein on Gelt.
At Goldstein on Gelt, we just recently completely redesigned our website, and we also overhauled it by getting the world's greatest sound engineer on the show. who you might all know, Steve Stewart, also the sound engineer for the Money Tree podcast, is now running the engine at Goldstein on Gelf.
Oh boy, it's all downhill now. I'm the Stacking Benjamin Show. It's been crazy, you know, our roundtable contributors, Paula Pant at Afford Anything, Len Penzo at LenPenzo.com, and Greg McFarland, the creator of the book Control Your Cash. We often wonder during the week what they're actually up to when they're not on our show. So coming up on a lot of our episodes, we're going to kind of take a look at what they do, and you might be surprised to see what Len Penzo's doing when he's not on our show. How about that? That's a reason to listen.
I am curious.
Yeah, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Stacking Benjamins. All right, guys, thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a ton for your reviews of the show on iTunes or wherever you listen. And Miranda Marquette, it is all you, girlfriend.
All right. Well, let's remember to check us out at moneytreepodcast.com, where you can listen to all of our past episodes and get access to a bunch of other free resources. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Also, we'd love for you to leave a review. We love reading what you think about our show, especially if you say nice things. And don't forget that you can ask us questions. Please send us your questions. You can do that through the website at moneytreepodcast.com. I know we've got to have a listener question episode fairly soon, so get those questions into us. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do, so invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.
Steve Stewart, also the sound engineer for the Money Tree Podcast, is now running the engine at Goldstein on Gelf.
Oh boy, it's all downhill now. No, you know what's funny? Steve's going to edit that out.
No, don't edit it out. Keep that in. I want people to know how awesome. Really, it's